Hi, I'm Steve Clements, and I have a question. 20 years after opening the off-the-grid military prison in Guantanamo, why is it still open? And can the United States ever really shut it down? Let's get to the bottom line. It's considered one of America's most historic and problematic national security decisions, running a military prison outside the American legal system. But in the wake of the attacks of 9/11, U.S. forces were scooping up hundreds of prisoners in Afghanistan with no idea whether they posed a threat or not, or what to do with them. The U.S. military described the prisoners then at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, as the worst of the worst. But guess what? Soon it became obvious that the vast majority had nothing to do with 9/11, or at least couldn't be convicted, and hundreds of them were sent home. Today, 39 prisoners remain in military detention, with many just waiting for any country to take them. And the bigger question remains out there. If the United States would resort to such tactics when it felt threatened, why shouldn't authoritarian regimes around the world do the same thing? It's still a sore political subject in the United States. So is the military prison in Guantanamo morally unacceptable? And can it be shut down for good? Today, we're talking to John Bellinger III, who served as legal advisor to the National Security Council and senior associate counsel to President George W. Bush during the establishment of the detention facility in Guantanamo. And he was later chief legal advisor to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and he also helped draft the legislation that created the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. He's now a lawyer in private practice with the law firm Arnold and Porter in Washington, D.C. And Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University's School of Law. She's the author of several books on the ways that the war on terror impacted justice and law inside America, including The Least Worst Place, Guantanamo's First 100 Days. It's really great to be with you both. John Bellinger, let me ask you, you were there at the creation, and you've written very compellingly in the Lawfare blog. I would highly recommend to our readers to go read your very articulate explanation of why Guantanamo was established and your support for it. But take us back to that time and tell us what you thought the compelling reasons were for Guantanamo to be established.
Thanks, Stephen. It's nice to be with you and also with my old friend, Karen Greenberg, who I've talked about Guantanamo with for a number of years. So let me just say right at the outset, before I answer your question, Steve, that I have long been a Guantanamo skeptic, and from probably my third year in the government, I have supported the closure of Guantanamo because I've thought that it does us more harm than good, and I advocated for that for much of the time that I was in government. But let me go back to the beginning, because that is important, and I think that actually has been mischaracterized by critics. So as you pointed out, after the invasion of Afghanistan, U.S. forces had captured hundreds, if not thousands, of suspected Taliban or al-Qaeda members, people who had trained in training camps, or people who had been turned over to U.S. forces. The war was still going on in Afghanistan, and the military commanders said to those of us in Washington in December, we can't hold all these people here. If you want us to question them, there's still a hot war going on. You need to find a place to hold them where they can be questioned so that we can actually determine who is responsible for 9/11 and whether there are going to be more attacks coming, because that really was the worry in the fall of 2001, beginning of 2002, that there would be more attacks. So policymakers in Washington considered a number of places to hold these detained, suspected Taliban and al-Qaeda members outside of Afghanistan, where the commanders didn't want them. We looked at different places around the world and in the United States, and ultimately settled on Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, which was a naval base just off the coast of Florida that the Clinton administration had used to house something like 10,000 Haitian and Cuban refugees during the Clinton administration. So there was infrastructure there, there was a Navy base there, there was housing there, people had been previously held there, but it was not in Afghanistan, and it was not in the United States where we would have been bringing a bunch of terror suspects. So that's why Guantanamo was originally created, not so much to try to put people outside the law, but to have a secure place to hold them that was not in Afghanistan.
Well, before I jump to Karen, let me just follow up, John, and ask, you know, on one level, that sounds pragmatic. It even sounds innocent. But we saw, as you said, you know, the development of enhanced interrogation techniques, and then behaviors not just about Guantanamo, but other black sites. We've heard stories about rendition of these prisoners to different places, humiliation, abuse, etc. I guess my question to you is, something that seemed pragmatic at the time became something that became very much of a dark spot later. What happened? Is it just the nature of governments in power and trying to deal with the passion and fear at that moment that led to those behaviors? What's your sense of it? Because you were in the middle, and I know, and I'll just tell our audience, you had a lot of moral problems with what it evolved. But how did that happen? How did that become part of that story?
Well, I think it was a pragmatic solution at the time that then ultimately went off base. You know, I think a lot of Guantanamo critics suggest that, well, if they'd been in office, that there would have been some perfect solution. But there was not a perfect solution in December 2001. Commanders in Afghanistan were clamoring for a place to hold the people because there was a hot war still going on in Afghanistan. Nobody wanted to bring, you know, hundreds, potentially 1,000 Taliban and al-Qaeda subjects to the United States. And so Guantanamo had been a place that had been used before to house people. It was very close to the United States. But you know, over time, you're absolutely right. And this is one of the reasons why I've long supported the closure of Guantanamo, including while I was still in government, is that it did become a real moral blot on the United States as a country that is committed to the rule of law. Now, a number of the other things that you mentioned really had nothing to do with Guantanamo: enhanced interrogation techniques or renditions or, you know, the Abu Ghraib. You know, those were a whole lot of other detention problems that were get mushed together with Guantanamo. Guantanamo certainly had its own problems, including that there were mistreatment and abuses at Guantanamo. But Guantanamo was not Abu Ghraib. Guantanamo was not the CIA black sites. People were not rendered to Guantanamo. But it all became sort of caught up in an overall image of abuse of detainees. And of course, there are the famous, famous pictures of the people in the orange jumpsuits at Guantanamo that ultimately became a recruiting tool for terrorists around the world. So again, starting as early as 2003 or four, when I was still in the White House, I began to argue that Guantanamo might have served a necessary purpose in the beginning of 2002, but it was becoming a albatross for the United States and ought to be closed down, and that the people there should be moved either to their own countries, who ought to take responsibility for them, or to prisons in the United States.
Thank you. Karen, I'm listening carefully to John and the early rationale for Guantanamo, but I also remember something a political science professor taught me a long time ago. He said, Steve, you never really know the norms of a political system until you observe it under stress. And under stress, you'll see, you know, not on a good day, but on a bad day, what a system will really do. And I guess from you, what does the Guantanamo detention facility in this story mean in terms of America's story out in the world and how it is seen?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me and for doing this show on the 20th anniversary of Guantanamo's opening. And it's so nice to be in conversation with John, who's mentored me through so many of the questions about Guantanamo. So, you know, what does Guantanamo mean? What it means in a time of stress, as you just said, was the United States' willingness to push aside many of the rules and regulations and norms that would have governed prisoners in a wartime situation. And I would say more, that it was to John Bellinger's point, it was the perpetuation of that as much as the original setup that has led us to the quagmire that we're in today. I also just want to tag on to something else that you said before. You raised about the black sites and the torture of individuals in custody at CIA black sites in many countries around the world. Those prisoners were brought to the United States in the fall of 2006. After the time John was talking about, that there was some consideration, including his, that it was the right thing to do to close Guantanamo Bay. Rather than close it, they did bring these black site individuals, what we refer to mostly as high-value detainees, to Guantanamo. And that, in a way, changed the nature of Guantanamo forever. It made it look like it was actually the worst of the worst that were there, and not just people that had been rounded up as sort of as in Afghanistan and elsewhere to try to just get whoever they could that they thought might, you know, want to do ill to the United States. And so that piece of Guantanamo actually changed and has changed it to this day. You know, now we're 20 years out. We still have 39 prisoners. Over half of, almost half of them, have been cleared for release, many by the Biden administration. We have military commissions that, if you were a betting person and you wanted to say, will they ever start, you might not say yes. And whether or not you would say, will they ever come to conclusion, that would be a whole other a bet. So I would say we're stuck in a limbo. We've been in this limbo as a country for nearly all of these 20 years. And although we nip and tuck at it here and there, it seems that the end is forever out of our reach, forever elusive.
What about the arguments that some others have made? And recently there was, on the 20th anniversary of the opening of Guantanamo Detention Facility, testimony before the facility, Karen, you participate in this, and even Major General Michael Leonard, who was the Marine Corps Major General who established and set up Guantanamo, that was his order, he sort of stepped back, and he's among other military officials are saying, look, we need to close this, it's doing much more harm to American national security than it is doing good. But you also cite in a piece that ran in the American Prospect, Karen Greenberg, a comment by someone who said we still need to do it, George Mason University's Jameel Jaffer. And you quote him saying, we know that our enemies continue to target us. We know that the war on terror continues. The question then is what to do about these detainees. We know all these detainees currently remaining at Guantanamo Bay. Some of them represent the most hardcore, the most committed of the terrorists we've captured in this conflict. But what about the argument that Jameel Jaffer makes, Karen?
So a couple of things. First, just about Major General Mike Leonard. He's a large part of that book that I wrote, The Least Worst Place, about the opening of Guantanamo. And so many of the issues that John Bellinger just raised and that I refer to were apparent in those first 100 days, which is sort of a sorry state of affairs, considering it's continued this long. The same arguments that were made then are being made now, as you just referred to. And what about that argument is, and I would love to hear John Bellinger talk about this, is a couple of things. First, we can resolve the military commission's cases. There are a number of ways to do that. You can do it through habeas in the federal courts. You can do it through plea deals, potentially. There are ways to do it and not to have this process draw out even longer than it is. And there's an assumption that it just needs to draw out. That is not the case. The second thing is that 9/11 did catch us off guard in terms of our national security defenses and offenses. We have spent 20 years as a country building up an intelligence infrastructure, a military infrastructure, a military intelligence infrastructure, a law enforcement infrastructure. My understanding is the United States has made itself a safer nation, has made itself understanding what the threats against us are in the world when it comes to the area of terrorism. Why are we so afraid of being able to take care of ourselves when it comes to these 39 individuals? What is it that's holding us back? The recidivism rates, despite many reports that have come out, do not seem to be anywhere near what they were once thought to be. It's a 5% recidivism rate among those that Obama left out. I think more than that for who Bush had left out. It's been a long time in coming. And let me just say one other thing. The detainees, those that could be cleared for release now, not the military commission's one, they're old. Many of them are sick. Many of them are in very much reduced capacity. And when you talk to those who are out, or you read what they've read, or you listen to interviews, you know what they say? They say, I want to get on with my life. I want to see my wife. I want to see my children. I want to participate in the world. They're not talking about terrorism, which is why they're being cleared, one of the reasons they're being cleared for release. So that's a partial answer, I think, to what you're raising.
Well, let me ask John Bellinger, you know, how can these cases be dispatched? These people moved elsewhere.
When one criticizes that, almost anything in government, one also has to think of sort of what was the alternative. And, you know, the alternative to setting up a Guantanamo was either, you know, to hold people in Afghanistan, which would have required us sending probably thousands of more troops and FBI agents to Afghanistan to hold the people there, question people there that were not safe and sanitary, secure conditions there. So we would have had to have sent people to Afghanistan there. Now, maybe that was the answer, candidly, because people got moved too quickly out of Afghanistan. The screening was badly done. And so a lot of people got sent to Guantanamo who really didn't need to be held because the initial screening was not well done. But the alternative would have been, and you know, we've just gone through a great national debate about whether we should be sending people into war zones, is to have sent thousands of people to Afghanistan to hold them and question them there. But in any case, they are at Guantanamo over four presidents now, starting with George Bush and then Barack Obama and then Donald Trump and now Joe Biden. Well over 750 people have been transferred to other countries. The detainees came from something like 30 different countries who had all gone to Afghanistan. And I can tell you that, you know, despite, although I think some of the people in Guantanamo really were entirely innocent, when you hear their lawyers say, you know, that they were all in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I don't think all of those people were in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, some of them were, in fact, up to no good. They could not be charged under U.S. criminal laws because U.S. criminal laws at the time in 2001 did not apply to the conduct of non-U.S. nationals in Afghanistan. It wasn't a crime for a Yemeni or a Saudi to simply train in a training camp in Afghanistan. So when you hear their lawyers or advocates say, well, they've been charged with nothing, they've been charged with no crime, you know, the assumption is, well, therefore, they've done nothing wrong and are innocent. And in some cases, I think there were mistakes and people were innocent. But not every single person who was released and not charged with the crime, you know, had been simply a tourist in Afghanistan. So over successive presidents, we did get most countries to take their nationals back so that we wouldn't be responsible for them. That leaves us now to the remaining 39. Some, as Karen have said, have been cleared for release. They'll have to go back to their own countries. We have to make sure they'll be treated well in their own countries. There are about a dozen who have been charged with crimes in military commissions, people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who has been personally admitted to cutting off the head of the Wall Street Journal reporter Danny Pearl. So there are some bad people there. And then there are another dozen, roughly, Karen can give you the exact number, of people who have not been charged but have not been cleared for release. Now, let me bring in something that we haven't mentioned yet, which is critical, is that the reason, a key reason that Guantanamo has not closed and certainly was not closed within a year after Barack Obama wanted to do so, ordered it done, is that Congress in 2011 passed laws that are still on the books that prohibit the transfer of Guantanamo detainees to the United States. So there is a congressional law that has been supported by both Republicans and Democrats saying detainees can't be moved into the United States. Now, I think that is a mistake. When I was still in the Bush administration, I supported transferring as many people out of Guantanamo to their home countries so we wouldn't have to be responsible for them. And the remainder, who either we wanted to prosecute or we felt were too dangerous to transfer into the United States. And I think those who argue that it's not safe to transfer into the United States, that is just hogwash. You know, we have maximum security prisons, either in military prisons or civilian prisons. And I think if we were to transfer the remaining number of these detainees at Guantanamo to either a military facility or a civilian facility, they are not going to be walking out the back door. I have confidence in that.
Well, thank you, John. Well, Karen, I know both you and John, you know, live this story and have been working on these issues so deeply, which is why we are talking to you. But as you go out and take the temperature, as you talk with Senator Dick Durbin, who chaired and held these hearings earlier on potentially closing Guantanamo, do you sense that there's any shift in this time of Biden, the Biden era, to actually doing things that other presidents couldn't do? The article that you wrote sounded pessimistic.
Yeah, it's funny. I started out very optimistic at the beginning of the Biden administration because a number of things were done to clear individuals, to transfer, to move ahead with the military commissions. I think there is much more sentiment for closing Guantanamo than there has been in the past. I've seen statements by a number of senators and others, representatives, about trusting America in the world, and it's come up in a couple of hearings lately. I also think there are a lot of people who just aren't aware of Guantanamo, who aren't thinking about it. And the idea that there would be some kind of tremendous pushback, yeah, if politicians wanted to really inflame it and get them to talk about it, I think that's fine. I think one of the things that may be going on is, and I, of course, hope this, is that there's some kind of behind-the-scenes work going on. But there has not been a special envoy appointed, as there was under Obama, canceled under Trump, to take these individuals that have been released and to find countries that will take them, because most of them are not going to be released to their home country. Many come from Yemen and other war-torn areas where the United States feels that it would be too dangerous to put them, both for terms of our security, should they want to reengage, and their own security in terms of human rights issues. But the thing you can't lose sight of here is that it's 39 people. We as a country, to be able to say we haven't been able to close Guantanamo, we can't find a judicial system, either federally or at Guantanamo in the military commissions, that knows how to adjudicate these cases. This is such an insult to the way we like to think of our institutions, their robustness, their ability to handle things. Eric Holder tried to bring these cases to the United States when he first came into office. That is when Congress, after that trial, Congress passed the law saying that no detainee could come here for any reason whatsoever, not health, not trial, not anything else. It would be great if that could change, but I don't think plans going ahead are going to be dependent on that.
Let me just do a quick gut check with both of you. 10 years from today, if we invited back to all talk about this again, will we still have a Guantanamo detention facility likely still open, John Bellinger?
I think there's a real possibility, although I hope that Joe Biden will actually figure a way to get it closed. As Karen said, there are only 39 people left, 18 cleared for release. That's only about 20 left. Lawyers argue that the president could simply use his executive powers to move people to the United States, some to be held without charge, unfortunately, and some who would be prosecuted either in a military system or a judicial system. So I hope that he will actually figure out a way to get it closed during his presidency, but I certainly wouldn't bet money that 10 years from now that it will still be open.
Karen Greenberg, real quick, are we going to be talking about this in 10 years?
No. I have to believe what I want to believe, which is we're going to figure out how to close this finally, once and for all.
Well, listen, thank you to you both for your candor and your insights into this. John Bellinger, former advisor to the State Department and National Security Council, and Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So what's the bottom line? Groups like the Islamic State appropriated the iconic orange jumpsuits worn by Guantanamo prisoners as part of their story that they were murdering and killing because of the unjust ways that their comrades detained in Cuba were being treated. With Guantanamo, where America abandoned the rule of law and treated prisoners inhumanely, tortured them, America gave its enemies a gift that has helped them recruit tens of thousands of young men and women to join their ranks. I would like to say that what we've seen in these last decades at Guantanamo is not the real America. But the truth is that it is, in part, who and what America is. There is a dark side. Just there is also a system of justice for most. And wrestling candidly and honestly with this dark episode is the only way America can once again prove to a new generation around the world that the rule of law and democracy are worth aspiring to. Guantanamo, whether it remains open longer or it closes, must never be forgotten. Remembering it, knowing that Americans were not their best selves there, is the only way to move beyond it. And that's the bottom line.